Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Jeder meckert über den ÖPNV. Aber was steckt wirklich dahinter? Mit dem Podcast Ticket to Anywhere blickst du hinter die Kulissen des Nahverkehrs. Schauspieler Maximilian Mund reist zu seiner Oma, trifft spannende Menschen wie Malte Zierden oder Linda Zervakis und erklärt alles zu Bus und Bahn und wie sie besser werden können. Erlebe ein außergewöhnliches Audioerlebnis rund um unsere alltägliche Mobilität. Jetzt reinhören auf Spotify oder unter zukunftnahverkehr.de/podcast.
Will they find a home? Sponsored by Geico. Steve is intrigued by the paranormal.
Otherworldly spirits really make a house a home, you know?
Janice has different taste.
I'd like my house to not be haunted.
Compromise is tough, but these two won't have to compromise when they bundle home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and they could save even more. In the end, Steve and Janice found a renovated Victorian that's only haunted from 9 to 5.
Okay, wife's home. Y'all gotta bounce.
Bye, Steve.
Bundling without compromise at geico.com.
From the basement of the Bob and Tom Studios, it's That Josh Arnold Podcast. Oh, hello there. How the heck are you? Yes, it's that time again. Time for another visit with me, and what a fine week it is, and what a good show we have today. My gosh, today's guest, I don't like to throw this word around often, but a true hero in the sense that whenever they're around, it feels like the day, regardless of how it's going, has been saved. And what a wonderful person to have with us. My guest this week is you. Hi. How the heck are you? Man, oh man. So nice to see you. You look good. I hope you're feeling well. And hey, if you're celebrating the Lent season, or is it Lenten season? I don't. If you're celebrating Lent, hope it's going well for you. And if you're not, well, then I'm certain that's going well for you. You didn't have to give up anything, did you? So, so that's always nice. But hey, if you did, I'm sure you're doing well and sticking with it. I should let you all know, this is one of Josh's confessions. Although the word confession suggests I may harbor some guilt about this. I don't. But maybe you didn't know this about me. I recently confessed that I am a unabashed lover of horse stories. I love books about horses, and I love movies about horses, and even songs about horses. There are a few out there. But one, another thing that you may not know about me, I love fast food fish sandwiches. Love them. Love them. And we are in the heart of fish sandwich season. I've always said that March is whenever you turn on the TV, it's just fish sandwich and tax preparer commercials. That's all. It'll be Arby's and then H&R Block and then McDonald's and then some tax attorney and then Wendy's and then whoever the hell else does taxes. So, but I love fish sandwiches, and I'll be honest, I'm behind in my fish sandwich consumption so far. I've only had a Filet-O-Fish for McDonald's. I haven't gone to Arby's yet. Boy, these places make, oh my gosh, I don't know if Arby's is doing it this year. But they will sometimes put their fish on a King's Hawaiian bun, and that combo is just terrific. Oh man, oh man. In fact, I will insist they do it. And they may even say, look, we haven't used King's Hawaiian buns on any sandwich for a few months. I'm sure there's a stale one back there. I don't care. That's what I want. Please, please try to do it. Oh, man. I'd be hard-pressed to tell you a bad fast food fish sandwich is out there. I know some of you may not care for them, and that's fine. But in my opinion, you can't go wrong. I won't. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Okay. I need to get on it. So yes, anyway, I hope you're enjoying your Lent. You know who likes fish sandwiches that I found out. But she doesn't seem to eat them, like get them from fast food. She like makes her own, I guess, because I don't know. There's something about, I've never recognized one that she's eating, but the smell is as strong as any fish I've ever smelled. And that's old Shelley, the lady that works down here sometimes. She makes a fish sandwich that, she seems to enjoy it. She wolfs them down. I saw her have three one day, and they're not small. They're not small. The fish is fried, but it's, I don't know. I'll just have to ask her next time she's down here. What the heck fish are you making? Please remind me to do that, because it's rough. Maybe it's roughy. I have no idea. Is that the kind of show we're going to have today, Josh? Maybe. Well, I mean, what? What? Maybe it's roughy. Okay. So, you know what? I talked about these places. I actually named some products, but they're not our sponsor this week. I'm happy to still mention them. But I would be remiss if I didn't give our sponsor this week its proper due, and I'm going to do it right now. All right, sponsoring the That Josh Arnold podcast this week, a lamp. That's right, a lamp. You know how it is. Sometimes you come home and you can't see in your own home, and what do you do? You look. You can flip on the light switch and get. Those overhead lights. I'm not talking about those this week. I'm talking about turning on a lamp. Isn't that nice? Lamps, of course, brighten up rooms, don't they? They're good for reading. Well, you know what? Some lamps even warm, keep those fish sandwiches at my fast food restaurants warm, don't they? They'll make them go, oh, wait, we might need to do this right away. We'll keep it under the heating lamp and keep that fish sandwich nice and warm. Lamps can be very decorative. Isn't that nice? They help with the aesthetic of your home. I love a lamp. I much prefer a lamp to an overhead light. If I had it my way, every office building, there'd be none of those fluorescent lights above. Everybody would just have lamp, their own lamp. And it would be very inefficient. And I have no idea if it would affect the efficiency. I imagine it would. But anyway, I like lamps. What about genies? They live in lamps. And you might be saying, oh, that's not what you're talking about. They're called lamps, but they're not really like the lamp that lights anything. Why are they called lamps? Aren't they essentially just vases? Or they're almost even more like teapots. You rub it and the genie comes out. I don't know why that's called a lamp. You know what? Let's get that changed. I'm going to have to read 1001 Arabian Nights or whatever. I've never read it, and find out exactly where the heck they get off calling those lamps. All right. Anyway, I hope that this week you find time to enjoy a lamp yourself. I made a last minute change here. Jason walked in and he said, I'm ready to produce. And I said, all right, well, just give me another minute because I have made a last minute change regarding our trip to Vocabulary Station. Ah, yes. All aboard. We're heading there. The construction's nearly complete. Just a few more weeks, I'm going to say. But they are further along. They're more than halfway there. I can tell. New buildings up. In fact, they had to lay new track for our train to travel along. You're all going to like it. I'm convinced of it. I was meeting with the mayor recently about some of the changes, and boy, they're exciting. And by the way, they don't affect any of your taxes. The all of the construction that's happening now, there have been just benefactors. Just some of the local wealthy have chipped in and said, you know what, we don't want this to be a burden on the average family. We will go ahead and take care of it, and you will enjoy it, I'm sure. But for now, Vocabulary Station, we have arrived. And I originally had a word that will be pushed to next week because I was looking over some emails and I was reminded of a word that, my gosh, I need to find who sent this in. This is a terrific suggestion. And if I can't find it, boy, I apologize. I hate when people send things in. And what I'm saying is I hate my behavior because I forget to write down their name or whatever so that I can, give them the proper credit. Anyway, I can't find it, and I apologize. Maybe I'll find it and can get your name next week. But anyway, a person wrote in and said, you need to look up the definition of this word. And I did, and it's got many definitions, but I think I know which particular definition he's referring to because he said it made him laugh out loud, and it made me laugh out loud. So I'm going to assume that since he listens to that Josh Arnold podcast, he has similar tastes as I, and that we both laughed at the same definition. The word is sprunt, S-P-R-U-N-T, and it's already kind of funny. The main definition of sprunt, the most common, and this is a very British word, by the way, from by all accounts, mostly used in England and Scotland and in different ways. So, but the main definition of sprunt, the one that I found to be most popular, is simply a convulsive movement, like a leap or a sudden spring action. So you might sprunt out of your chair if you heard a loud noise behind you, that kind of thing. Or perhaps one of those, you know, that I believe it's called a myocardial jerk? I'll look it up for sure. But it's the jerk that your body does when you are falling asleep and you're drifting to sleep. And all of a sudden you just have this massive spasm. And you kind of wake up for a second, go, what the heck was that? And then you end up drifting back to sleep. And I think it is something like myocardic or myocardial, something like that. And I will, maybe it's myoscope, whatever. I apologize for not knowing just off the top of my head, but I will re-examine that. You know why your body does that? Apparently, when you're falling asleep and your body, body's sort of shutting down, sometimes your nervous system gets confused and thinks that you're dying. Not just that you're falling asleep, but that you're actually allowing yourself to pass away. And so the body involuntarily jerks like that to sort of get you moving again and remind your body, hey, don't die. Like it's a weird thing. So if you've ever wondered what that's about, apparently that's what that is. And boy, those can scare the heck out of you. And I think I get them quite often, and I know my dad did too. He took a very similar panic disorder medication that I'm on, and so it's a side effect of that too. But yeah, nothing like your panic attack medication causing a panic attack when it wakes you up like that as you're trying to drift to sleep. But anyway, back to sprunt, a convulsive movement, a leap, a jump. It also means, and I like this definition too, a steep incline or ascent on a road. So if you're on a road and you see that there's a short but very steep hill that you have to go up, that's a sprunt. So I think you can use this word either way. Now, there are a couple funny versions out there. George Carlin had a bit And I apologize. This is slightly blue. I'm not going to cuss, but you'll understand what George Carlin says, that he wanted to invent a feminine deodorant spray called Sprunt, and I think you could figure out how he came to that name. It's a spray, you can do the math on that. But our anonymous writer. Anonymous because I forgot to note their name, the definition that I think that this person really wanted me to find of Sprunt is of a Scottish nature, and it dates back to quite some time ago. I apologize, I'm just pulling it back up here on my phone. It means, and this is my favorite of the definitions for the word sprunt. It simply means boys chasing girls around haystacks after dark. Isn't that something? So they think that it might be, and this is a great word for you as well, a portmanteau, which is a combination of two words, so like infotainment, you get information and entertainment. You would turn that into a portmanteau or portmanteau. So you're just combining two words into one. So they think this might be sprint and hunt. So you sprunt. So it's boys chasing girls around haystacks after dark, which you can imagine Scottish adolescents taking part in maybe a century or two ago. In the Victorian era. So, it's very fun. If you can use it in that way this week, you get extra credit. If you use it in any way, you'll get your full points. But extra credit for somebody who refers to boys chasing girls around haystacks after dark as sprunting. What a fascinating word. And my goodness, thank you for submitting that. Whomever you are, I will give you credit when I can once again find your name. In fact, if you wouldn't mind, email me and say, hey, that was me. Now, if I get like seven of them, I'm going to know six of you are liars. But Sprunt. Boy, oh boy. What a simpler time, huh? And I like to think that there's nothing untoward about the sprunting back in the Victorian era, that it was simply just boys having fun with girls. They weren't chasing them in any sort of malicious way or anything like that. That's just, hey, we're boys, we're gonna chase these girls, and hopefully the girls had fun running away from the silly boys chasing them around haystacks after dark. I wonder what the word would be for boys chasing girls around haystacks during the day. Why is this only after dark? Maybe it was considered impolite to chase a girl around a haystack during the day, and it only happened at night. Who's to say? If you're a Scottish historian or maybe some sort of British sociologist who's aware of that, of the practice of sprunting, fill us in. Yeah, let us know. All right. That's enough. Man, speaking of boys chasing girls, in a sense, RIP Pepe Le Pew, huh? Yeah. Some people said, you know what? Maybe this isn't the best image we want out there of. Now, I argue against that. You know, you guys know me. I'm not a big cancel culture guy. I think if you don't like something, you can pretty much ignore it. And it's really, look, I don't think Pepe Le Pew is responsible for many of the ills in our society. I just don't. And you can disagree with me. I totally respect that. But my argument would be, that Pepe Le Pew is, he wants to, woo this woman, and he is aggressive. He grabs her and squeezes her, you know, hugs her or whatever, and she wants to get away. He should immediately let her go, but he doesn't. But here's the thing. It's not that she's not attracted to him. She thinks she smells. If you remember in the cartoons, it's because he smells. And I think there might be a second and perhaps larger reason why Pepe Le Pew isn't as politically correct as he may have been considered at one point. It's because there's that stereotype. He is the embodiment of the smelly Frenchman, which was an unfortunate stereotype. And let's just say Pepe's got at least two strikes against him when it comes to the sort of what are they called? The social warriors or whatever, the culture warriors. I forget exactly, but that's okay. If Pepe's not your thing, I always liked it because I always felt that he proved himself to be a fool more often than somebody that you should look up to. So, in fact, many people also forget that cat in the most famous Pepe Le Pew, when the cat gets some paint on it and it's all of a sudden it's got a white stripe down its back, Pepe confuses it for a skunk and, of course, falls in love. Well, at some point, that cat notices that... did you hear me burp just now? Did that come across? Okay. If you did, I apologize. But I definitely burped it like with a... It was a closed mouth belch. And if you heard it, I didn't mean to be rude. You know what happened? I had a plant-based protein shake about 20 minutes ago. And even as I was drinking it, I went, I have no idea how this is going to affect my body. And apparently it's going to give me a little bit of burping. So if another one creeps out, my apologies in advance. Anyway... And if you didn't hear it, then this was all a waste, and I apologize for that, too. So, Pepe Le Pew gets paint on him, and his stripes, his skunk stripes, are gone now. He's just all black, and so he looks like a cat. And now the pursuer becomes the pursued, doesn't he? She can't believe how handsome he is and chases him, and now he's uncomfortable. So... I know this is one could argue that it kind of evens out in the end, but one could also argue that the behavior of both is bad. So anyway, if you enjoy Pepe, I say enjoy him. If you don't, I say don't. Look, it's not a cop out. I am very middle of the road when it comes to some of this stuff. I myself, though, am anti-cancel culture, and that's not to say that I don't think some things should go away. They should. They should just naturally sort of go away because we've either gotten better as people or the thing that is being canceled was so blatantly offensive that it needs to go. I would argue that a lot of things that aren't... that are considered, you know, that are sort of canceled these days, aren't blatantly offensive. They were never meant to cause harm. They just kind of have as we've grown as a society. Now they're considered harm. But you got to give them a little bit of a break, don't you? I mean, look, Mr. Potato Head and Mrs. Potato Head, who have recently come under some scrutiny because they identify their own genders or whatever. I know it's more than that. It's you want everybody to be able to find whatever toy they're comfortable with. So, but when they named Mr. Potato Head Mr. Potato Head, they weren't out to exclude anybody. That's just, in my opinion, there was nothing malicious about it. So we can go a little easier on some of this stuff, I think. And I recently bought a Pepe Le Pew coffee mug that I intend on drinking out of every morning as sort of my, well, I'll sort of compare it to the Gadsden flag, which is that coiled snake with the don't tread on me thing. That's my Pepe coffee mug is going to be my slight nose thumbing at cancel culture. Just, hey, look, if this bothers you, maybe it shouldn't bother you all that much. Hey, look, I know some of you disagree with me. And again, please know that I definitely respect and appreciate your opinion and your side of the argument. I'm just going to disagree with you. And I'm going to show it in a passive way by drinking out of my Pepe Le Pew coffee mug. But we can still be friends. I hope you know that. Anywho, how did I get off on that? Oh, that's right. Boys chasing girls around haystacks after dark. All right. Well, I certainly enjoyed that definition. And I'd like to tell you now what else I've enjoyed. Oh, will you look who it is? It's Pepe Le Pew. Oh, Pepe. Oh, wait a minute. You know what he just did? He walked by a cat, a female cat, and tipped his hat to her and moved on. I think Pepe's learning. I think he's becoming a bit more of a gentleman. Good for you, Pepe. You can show your appreciation without having to be so aggressive. Oh, good for you. Oh boy. Well, he just kissed a lady on the lips. No, you can't do that, Pep. Will he ever learn? You're gonna don't get me canceled, Pep, because I bought a coffee mug with your face on it. What I enjoyed this week is a movie that apparently a few folks are enjoying because it's been nominated for a handful of Oscars. Man, I used to love the Academy Awards and I used to love award shows. I don't anymore. I think I grew out of it. And I also kind of realized, man, a lot of this isn't about the art itself. It's about politics and stuff like that. And so I kind of just I don't really pay much attention to award nominations or shows or anything like that. But this one is certainly deserves some if it wins some awards, it deserves them. The movie is available on Amazon Prime. It's called Sound of Metal, and I loved it. It was one of my favorite movies in the last year, and it's about a guy who is a drummer in a heavy metal band. The band consists of he and his girlfriend, and suddenly his hearing starts to go, and it starts to go quick. And he finds out that he has degenerative hearing loss, and it's just going to get worse. And of course, this turns his life upside down. The man plays music for a living, and he has to figure out what to do. He's also an addict, and he's recovered. A recovering addict, drug addict, but he's worried that this news and his new deafness will cause him to spiral out of control. And so the movie then, it's an exploration of how he deals with his new deafness. And it is great. The acting is absolutely stellar. The lead is played by a gentleman named Riz Ahmed, who's a wonderful actor. I've only seen him in a couple other things. I believe he won an award, maybe it was an Emmy or a Gold Globe or something, for that HBO show, The Night Of. And look, he's a star. This guy is so great. He's absolutely going to be a household name, more so than he is becoming this year. Also, the supporting cast is great. Olivia Cooke is a wonderful actress. She plays his girlfriend. And a man, I know I've seen him in movies, but not in much. And he is nominated for Best Supporting Actor, and I'm thrilled to see it. His name is Paul Raci. I'm going to say Racy or Rassy. The guy is great. He's great, and he's a fascinating man in real life. He grew up with deaf parents, so he learned American Sign Language right away, and he's incredibly fluent in it, of course. And he himself is not deaf, but he is in an Ozzy Osbourne cover band. I forget if it's Black Sabbath or Ozzy. I imagine he does both. And it's an ASL thing. He will do American Sign Language while singing and all that in the cover band, and apparently they're stellar. I'd love to see it. So I really recommend this movie. It's a wonderful example of character and acting. And, you know, there are not a lot of big set pieces, but the, oof, boy, just powerhouse emotional stuff. It is really good. Sound of Metal. And Mr. Ahmed is nominated. I think the movie itself is nominated for Best Picture and Best Screenplay and all these things. It well worth a look. By the way, I'll warn you, the first like 2 or 3 minutes are them performing a song live, and it is not easy to listen to. It's like, it's not just heavy metal. It's sort of, I mean, this really raw kind of hurt your ears metal. Don't let that deter you, all right? If heavy metal is not your thing, there's not a ton of heavy metal in this movie, I'll be honest. But there, up front there is, and, you know, just don't turn it off because it's too loud or too weird for you. You'll miss out on a terrific film. In my opinion, again, these are just my thoughts. If you didn't care for it, that's fine. It's totally okay. Yeah. Chick and I always joke about this. I'm talking about Chick McGee from the Bob and Tom Show. He and I often disagree on things, and we'll tease each other and we'll kind of make fun of each other, but we'll also have real discussions. And then at the end, Chick will look at me and go, wait a minute. We can disagree on this, but still be friends. And I go, of course. And he goes, huh? And we laugh because it's real easy today to think, well, since I disagree with this person, I can't like them. And I have a real problem with that. That's just not the case. And as far as I'm concerned, the more different viewpoints that are out there, the better the world. I love it. I love talking to people who have different ideas and different philosophies than me. I think it's fascinating, and I learn about myself when I hear other viewpoints. And I've gotten into heated debates with people, but I always feel like I've gotten closer to that person afterwards. Our disagreements don't push us away from one another. They in a way bring us together because we, you know, you have a deeper understanding of where each other is and where they came from. That's the thing. You never know what somebody's history is, and their history absolutely dictates, at least in some way or another, their view of the world. So, man, what am I going to do? Dislike somebody because they've had different experiences than I have that have helped shape who they are and how they think? No, that's ridiculous. I wouldn't want somebody to do that to me, and I definitely don't want to do that to somebody else. People are far more interesting than the quick, you know, 140, I think it's larger now, but whatever, how many characters you have on Twitter. And they're certainly much more interesting and more full and round than a quick Facebook post. You know, that look, everybody, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like my generation, I'm 42. When we were growing up, we were told a lot. And I remember being told this by my parents and by teachers, and that your opinion matters. And they're right. But what they didn't teach us enough, I think, is you don't always have to share your opinion. And trust me, I know there's an irony here. I'm a guy who's on the radio every morning, and now I have a podcast every week, and I'm constantly throwing my opinions out. Mostly on the podcast, my opinions are very genuine. On the morning show, sometimes, a lot of the time, you're getting my actual opinions, but there's a fair amount of time where you're just getting me sort of performing because I want to be the different voice in the room at the time or whatever. If everybody's agreeing on one thing, I'm going to disagree on the air to try to create some radio. So it's not. But anyway, we don't have to think that just because somebody doesn't agree with us on everything that they can't be our friend or our loved one or anything like that. And by the way, you can always just kind of go, hey, you know what? I didn't think of it that way, and drop whatever subject it is that's gotten heated. Because that's not a lie. You're not lying. Maybe you haven't thought of it that way. But it's not worth it. You know what I mean? It's not worth, you know, if you disagree with somebody politically or you disagree with somebody about art and culture or how they're living their life, whatever. Let's, I think it's also very important to remember that we're all kind of looking for the same end game, right? We want to be comfortable. We want to be happy. We want to be loved, and we want to share love, and we want to have fun and all these. We're all in it kind of for the same reasons. So, look, disagree and enjoy the disagreeing. Don't get angry. Don't hate somebody because they feel differently than you. I think that's a real problem. And but all it takes is look, you guys, all you have to do is I think many of you realize this, and you probably practice a lot more grace and mercy and forgiveness and understanding than those in the news do, or those you know, who are the most vocal on social media. And I appreciate that. Thank you guys for being those types of people. That's why you're all such a joy. I wanted to get to a couple quick questions. And then a good story, too. Some are comedy related. Mark writes in and he says, do you find yourself quicker for working on the Bob and Tom show? And what he's asking is, does my mind work a little faster now than it did before I was on live radio 4 hours, 5 days a week? Yeah. I mean, I had a certain amount of quickness to me anyway. I've been trained in improv, and so you learn to be pretty fast on your feet with that. I've always kind of had it because my family are witty, funny people. And so you kind of, you know, I think my first school in comedy was trying to make my dad laugh at the dinner table. I have three brothers, and, you know, getting him to laugh was, it felt great. So, you know, we were always trying to do that and trying to make each other laugh. So I've kind of grown up trying to keep my wit quick. With varying results, but yes, being on the show, has, I think, made my mind operate a little bit more, a little faster. And one of the main reasons is because it's taught me and reminded me to listen more, to really listen. In order to be quick, you have to listen. You can't formulate a joke. Let's say Christy Lee is doing a news story. I can't formulate a joke if I'm not listening to it. I need to be able to react. But if I'm sitting there going, if she says, Dateline Detroit, Michigan, and then she starts talking about a specific news story, if I'm sitting there going, okay, Detroit, what kind of joke can I make about Detroit? Well, that's no good because I'm not listening to the actual details of the story. Instead, I'm going to, 2 minutes later, I'm going to go, hey, Detroit, and people are going to go, well, what do we care? What is that, where the story took place? So by making me a better listener, the show has, also made me quicker because I'm often reminded to, hey, listen to what's going on. React to what you're hearing. And that's how I like to operate anyway. I think I'm better that way. He also asks, your first impression when you write, is it the audience or you? So do you write stuff you find funny, or are you writing stuff that you think the audience will find funny? I bet most comedians would say, and I'm one of them, that I write things that I think are funny. And I hope the audience thinks it's funny too. When you find out is when you go up on stage and you do these jokes for the first time and you go, all right, okay, the audience does find that funny. Or, well, I'm the only one. I'm the only guy that liked that, apparently. And you don't give up so quickly. At least I don't. Look, if I have a new bit, I give it. Before I rewrite it, I can't say that. Every bit's different. But you go through a process of, okay, it didn't work. I'm going to change this word, or I'm going to change that line, or I'm going to put this line in front of that line, whatever. You make adjustments, and then you try it again. If it works then, you go, oh, okay, it just needed some tinkering. If it still doesn't work, but you still think it's really funny, you just got to figure out a way through rewriting and getting up there and doing it to make it funny to an audience. And there are plenty of times where that will never happen. And you just go, okay, for whatever reason, I cannot sell this idea to the audience. It still makes me laugh. And sometimes it's frustrating. And oftentimes I'll go through a series of emotions with that. Usually the first one is sort of like cynical or angry. Like, what do these people know? I do comedy for a living. I know what's funny. But I'm wrong in that case. Audiences will let you know if it's funny. And look, I'm still allowed to think it's funny. But if I do the joke, and sometimes I will. Sometimes I'll be a stubborn enough jackass to go, I don't care. I don't care if that gets no laughs. I like saying it, and it's funny to me, and I'm going to say it. And, well, what happens? I say it, and it brings the show to a screeching halt. And in my head, I go, boy, is this worth it? What am I doing? Why am I saying something that I know no one enjoys? And eventually I drop it once I get it all out of my system. But there's nothing quite exciting. I mean, that's why... That's some of the best parts of one of the greatest parts of doing stand-up comedy is writing a bit. It's making you laugh as you're thinking about it and writing it. You go on stage, and my gosh, if they don't think it's if the audience is laughing too, oh, what a great feeling! And it's also a good feeling when you go, huh? They didn't really like that. What can I do? And you tinker with it, and you go back up, and you try it again in a new way. And it kills. You go, not only, it's almost the same feeling you get when you're like, oh, man, I really need to hang my TV. Should I call somebody and do it? Or no, you know what? I've never done it, but I can figure it out myself. And then you do it, and it looks great, and the TV hangs for 20 years. You go, I'm the greatest. Like, you just feel so good about yourself for being able to fix it yourself. But that said, there's a lot of fun in going to people that you think are funny, your comedian buddies, and maybe you don't even know this person, really. There have been plenty of times where I've gone to comedians that I just started working with one weekend and going, hey, will you listen to this thing about ice skating? I really feel like there's something funny there, but I'm not getting it. The audience doesn't care for it. I'm trying to figure out how to. And usually they're happy to go, yeah, I'll check it out. And then you come off stage and they go, okay, there's an idea there that's funny. Here's what's wrong, or here's what you can do to make it better. Oh, my, it's really fun. That kind of collaboration is really fun. And I don't do that a ton. I try not to solicit too much unless I know the person because I don't like to bother. Look, you have to remember, like, when I'm working with another comedian, that comedian is also at work, and they're probably thinking about a bit that they're trying to get to go over. And so I don't necessarily like getting in their way. But at open mics with good friends, oh, that's awesome. Somebody tries a new bit, doesn't necessarily, they come off stage, man, I couldn't get that to work. And sometimes it's as simple as, I remember one time I went up and I had new material that I thought was pretty strong, and I was doing it, and I was getting some laughs, but not a lot. And I got off stage and I go, man, I couldn't, boy, that didn't really work. And like three people almost at the same time said, why were you so mad? And I said, what? And they were like, you looked angry. And so the audience didn't think you were having fun and they didn't go along with you. And I went, oh my gosh, I probably was just concentrating on what I was trying to say and I didn't mean to look angry. And then one of my buddies goes, next time you do that bit, make sure you're smiling. And I went up and I did the bit and I was smiling and it killed. And I went, oh my God. So sometimes it's not just the words that need work. It's the delivery. You guys all know that delivery is a huge part of comedy, but also your presence. It looked like I wasn't enjoying what I was saying. And so the audience didn't enjoy it. But once I let them know, hey, I like what I'm saying, they liked it. So great questions. Mark also said, do you ever mention to Tom that people come up to you and mention, they talk about how fat you are or how you're not as fat as he says you are, and they always ask you about watching porn and that stuff? Yes. Every time that happens, I go, so Tom, I had somebody come up and ask me why I wasn't at home looking at porn. And he usually smirks and laughs and says, you're welcome. That happens. That happens a fair amount. Hey, I wanted to share this quick story with you because I had a very similar experience as Matt, who writes in. He wrote me a terrific letter about how he, too, had worked at a movie theater like I had. Perhaps you've listened to my podcast about it. If not, take a trip back and find it and enjoy it. But he says that he was in charge of sort of fixing the arcade games and all that stuff. Did a lot of maintenance and repair on those. And he mentioned I talked about how occasionally we would watch movies before they were out. So the night before they were released or whatever, after work, we'd stay and watch a movie with only a handful of people, and it was awesome. Well, this must have been fun because he watched, he spliced together the movie, which is just putting the movie together. This was back when they were on actual film. And he said there were four of them, and they watched The Blair Witch Project before it was released. So the thing about The Blair Witch Project is it's fairly divisive. Some people love it and thought it was horrifying. Others hated it and thought it was sloppy and not scary. And I'm not going to argue. I'm in the first class. When I first saw it, I was terrified. But if you didn't, I'm not going to argue with you. I totally get why it might not have affected you. One of the reasons it affected me, and this is also something Chick and I have discussed before, was before that movie came out, it was one of the first movies to have a large internet presence well before its release. So the filmmakers brilliantly made this website about the Blair Witch, and it was so realistic that you thought you were just looking at real accounts and reading real stories about this, purported witch in the woods and how some filmmakers at one time had tried to explore the myth and ended up missing and they were never found again. And the website was so well done and it was still fairly in its infancy. I mean, the internet was way younger than it is, than it was older, if that makes sense. It was still fairly new and it was really, really scary to go online and, with the dial-up modem. And then, hey, have you heard about this? And you go and you research the Blair Witch, and this very realistic website comes up. So it also says, hey, the movie's going to be released, and you can actually see the footage. And so when I went to see it, there was a lot of speculation as to whether or not it was real and what actually happened to these people. So I saw it opening day, and Chick said he did a very similar thing. He was freaked out by the website, went and saw the movie, and it scared the hell out of him. And that's what it did with me as well. So these folks, Matt and his coworkers, I'm sure were in a similar boat. And they said that they watched this movie. The sound system was pounding. They heard every noise. There was a giant screen. It was an empty theater. And they were all just paralyzed with fear during this thing. And they were so scared that when they were walking out, they were walking one girl to her car and she was just sobbing. She was so frightened. And I have no reason to doubt that. That, whew, I was frightened and uneasy walking out of a sold out theater when I saw it. And what a great experience. That is terrific. Somebody else wrote in and said that they watched a movie I recommended last week or the week before. Gary wrote in and said he watched Session 9, and he said, man, that movie scared the absolute piss out of me. Well, I'm glad. I hope you enjoyed it. He also said to check out Marianne on Netflix. Oh, that's that French horror series. I've not watched it yet, but I absolutely will. All right. Let's see here. Also, real quick, I wanted to refer you to the Bob and Tom app and the Bob and Tom mailing list and their social media, because shortly they're putting out, or maybe currently they are, putting out some photos that we all consider to be very embarrassing. Remember, I put something up on Instagram from when I was a baby, and because I didn't have a shirt on or whatever, they banned it. Look, I'm over it. No, I'm not over it. But by that, I mean I'm not over Instagram. I'm not. I will be back. Why'd you guys bring it up? Anyway, what was I going? Oh, anyway, I sent in a few photos for Chris Spangle, our social media guru, to put out there, all pretty embarrassing. And one of them was of me in my show choir outfit from high school when I was in Premiere, the show choir. So you'll get to see me in my fuchsia glitter vest and bow tie. It's quite something. I wanted to, I had a good time. I had a good time looking for these photos and, going through, a lot of photos, just pretty wild. And that leads me to what I would like us to do this week. Oh, listen to this. A nice new bass line for this segment. Holy cow. This is good. I'm a sucker for a solo bass, and boy, this scratches me where I itch. So, what we should work on this... In fact, I could even kind of jazz up my voice for what we could work on this week. Just for that part, maybe. Because to hear me do that for too long would be insufferable. I suggest this week, instead of watching a rerun or, you know, maybe watching the nightly news where it's just going to bum you out, instead, grab a shoebox full of photos or a photo album and just go through it. It's been too long since you've looked at those pictures anyway. Why not take a little stroll down memory lane and enjoy yourself? Look at those old photos. Maybe some you'll laugh at because they're a little embarrassing. Maybe others will bring a... it'll be bittersweet. It'll remind you of a nice memory and maybe a person that's no longer with us, but who you certainly keep alive in your heart and your mind. And maybe you can even share these photos with somebody who's never seen them. I bet they'll get a kick out of it. So yeah, take a little time and look through some old pictures. And... I think you'll enjoy yourself. I know I did when I did it this past week. And I hope you enjoy the rest of this week. We'll talk again very soon.
The United States Soccer Federation presents the U.S. Soccer Podcast.
This is the show where we bring you in-depth interviews with U.S. soccer stars.
This time,
Sam Coffey.
The World Cup is in 2 years.
Is it time yet? Like, can we get back in into camp?
Tim Ream.
We're going to continue to show other countries we're not going to be pushed around.
And Jedi Robinson.
Every time you come back and you put the jersey on, it means more and more each time.
So we'll be back here with all the best stories.
The U.S. Soccer Podcast.
We've got a lot to talk about.
Follow and listen on your favorite platform.